Education Innovation Policy. This is our last meeting to meet the deadline. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with the process, today we mark up the bill, which means we add amendments, and then send the bill to finance as it is rolled in with the finance bill here in the House. And for members, if we need to continue this meeting, we will resume after recess in room 200 at 5 o'clock or the call of the chair. And to everyone, it's been a pleasure to have you in the audience visiting us and giving us insight into how we can make education in the public sector better for our students, teachers, and hold our parents in high esteem at the same time. And to members, thank you for your hard work. I've been very pleased by the input that you provide. You're very insightful members, and that means a lot, and I try to listen carefully to what you bring to us. And of course to staff, especially to Ms. Para, who again has to work, has had to work endless hours to come up with our amendments and with our delete-alls and of course at the beginning with the bills. So we appreciate her time that she has spent to make this a very productive session. With that, Representative Nate Quaid, would you move the minutes, please, from March 25th?
I move the minutes from the March 25th education meeting.
Representative Nate Quaid moves the minutes of March 20, 2018. Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing or seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the minutes from March 20 are approved. So members and audience, we'll begin with my moving House File 3315 Delete All Amendment, or the DE1 Amendment, I guess I should say, to be on our agenda today. And then with that, members, I will move the H3315A40 Amendment, which is the Author's Amendment. And let me just hit on the substantive changes that have occurred. The rest you will see are, many of them are technical. Some of them come from the reviser so that we follow the style of the statutes. But the first substantive change would be beginning in the amendment line 1.6, where to college and career readiness, I have added the completion of rigorous coursework that fits a well-rounded education that would include advanced placement, international baccalaureate, concurrent enrollment, or the attainment of certificates or industry-recognized credentials, so that we're covering both career and college. The next substantive change is on line 1.11, where we have tried to understand the challenge that the commissioner faces in reviewing those World Best Workforce plans that may not be meeting the achieved goal that's set down by reducing the number of curricula that have to be examined to a sample of at least 3 and up to 5, and then across a size and geographic distribution. Another substantive change is on page 2 of the amendment, line 2.11. That we have added to explain the grounds for expelling the pupil instead of imposing non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices under section 121.8.41 sub 12. We think that's important so that we are meeting the needs of our districts in dealing with different occasions for expelling a student. Another is 2.17, a pupil remains eligible for schooling to mental health services provided in the district until the pupil is enrolled in a new district. And members, I have trouble saying pupil because I always want to say student, but it is in statute that we use pupil, so I apologize if I stumble there. Another is 2.19, the school district must provide to the pupil's parent or guardian a list of community mental health programs after expulsion. And you heard NAMI referred to that in testimony on Tuesday. On page 3.8, section 31, adding a parent notification, which we think is very important this is something that we have lifted, I think, from assertions, not suspensions. A school administrator must make and document efforts to immediately contact the parent or guardian of a pupil removed from a school building or school grounds by a peace or school resource officer unless such notice is specifically prohibited by law. Those are the substantive changes. Is there any discussion? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was looking for the line items, but I've got the items, and perhaps staff can help me in finding where the page and line is. I have three questions. So the first has to do with the modifying the measures of career and college readiness, and I like the direction in which the chair is going with this. Is this the language that originally had it, a definition of career and college readiness that was solely tied to the MCA test results?
Representative Mariani, yes, and Ms. Pira, would you clarify, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, in the DE amendment, yes, the career and college readiness reversed the definition of career and college readiness to the statute and into the MCAs.
Madam Chair, Ms. Pira, what page do I find that on?
This is on, are you looking for the delete everything amendment?
Thank you.
And the 840, it's on page 9, line 12, after mathematics. I believe you're going to delete that later in the amendment.
And Madam Chair, I may not need to, and that's probably why I'm asking the question.
that's pleasant to hear.
So, okay, I see it now. So it is. So, Madam Chair, and maybe Ms. Pira can help with this as well. Is this then new language that you're adding in the amendment before us? Does that language line up with the definitions of career and college readiness that we've already established in state statute?
Ms. Pira.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, if you'll just give me 1 second, I can pull out the definition. The definition of college and career readiness does include some of those elements. It says, has the knowledge, skills, and competencies to successfully pursue a career pathway, including post-secondary credit leading to a degree, diploma, certificate, or industry-recognized credential in employment. Students who are career and college ready are able to successfully complete credit-bearing coursework at a two or four-year college or university or other credit-bearing post-secondary program without need for remediation.
So, Madam Chair and Ms. Farrell, so the constructs are different here.
Slightly, yes.
But it sure sounds like there's some overlap here. I've not had enough time to look at all the way through in terms of comparing apples to apples, but as I said, I do like the direction which the chair is going to make sure that we're including those multiple measures for career and college readiness. We spent many years wrestling with how to do that properly. And then, Madam Chair, the language that adds manufacturing to the fields of a school counselor, where do I find that in the bill?
Representative Mariani, Representative Rarick, do you want to?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I'm first looking for the, but I do want to, I think I understand what's going on here, but let me just get to my question. In the original bill, and this is Representative Detmer's language originally?
That is correct, Representative Mariani, yes, to which Representative Rarick added trades.
Got it.
And then he felt there was an oversight and had left out manufacturing, so we added that in. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I like the language in terms of the permissiveness of demonstrating evidence of growth. I think, Sir Rarick, that's the right approach. Have we changed the construct, nonetheless, of the Detmer language that was not a may in terms of demonstrating growth on the part of counselors? And we had some discussion about this in committee, but sure looked like when it came to competencies with military access, that those competencies were going to replace, potentially could replace, the other elements that had already been in statute, cultural competency and a number of others. And is this language that you're amending change that NETMER approach as well?
Representative Lear?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mariani, that was the discussion that Representative Detmer and I had when he was in Veterans. That language probably would have, but when we brought it in and I did the amendment to bring in skilled trades, we brought it to the May so that it wouldn't replace any of that existing language. It would just be an option to be part of it.
Thank you. It's very helpful. I think it's also very wise. So then my question, Madam Chair, is, are we using the same approach then? Is this approach of May just simply to the trades, or does it include the other additional?
Representative Rarick.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, it would apply the same to the recruiters, the trades, and manufacturing.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Chair, one final question. You have eliminating the mandate for schools to use non-exclusionary disciplinary policies and practices prior to dismissal. This is maybe more complicated because there's a big construct that you're doing here. And again, I applaud the Chair's general direction in this in terms of incorporating some thought and advice from the coalition that you mentioned, the SNS coalition. We had a legislative task force on this as well a year ago. So I'm really pleased at the receptiveness. But I'm just wondering about, does this language then no longer tie those kind of alternatives to the act of dismissal?
Representative Mariani, we have allowed for this flexibility at the request of school districts. So, no, I don't believe it does, but we have given them some latitude here.
Madam Chair, members, I appreciate the latitude. I'm also mindful that as a legislature, as much as we respect our school districts, we also understand that they may want to get out from under some important directives here. So I want to look at this more carefully. Obviously, we won't have time to do that in depth today, but I'm concerned that school districts can now potentially dismiss without, in fact, offering those kind of alternatives. So it's nuanced, but the construct is really important. Current language, the state statute is real clear to school districts that if there's going to be a dismissal, then there shall be an alternative in some way offered. This still language appears to keep an alternative here. It doesn't necessarily strongly tie it to the act of a pupil dismissal. So I'll follow up with you, Madam Chair, depending on what goes on here and with school districts in the coming days.
And Representative Mariani and members, I do trust our school districts. They vary greatly across the state, and they need to have flexibility in many situations, and I think in this one as well. And if we need to further amend this, we will do so in the future. But thank you, Representative Mariani, for that input. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, the Chair renews her motion that the author's amendment, A40, be added to the delete all the DE1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and now the bill is in the order in which the author would like it, and we'll proceed to other amendments. Members, you have packets in your green sleeve. And we will begin with the A31. Representative Pryor moves the A31. So take some time, members, to find the A31. And once Representative Pryor has found it, yes, we have a multitude in front of us. You will explain.
Okay.
Representative Pride. Thank you. I found it. Thank you, Madam Chair. So A31, when we're talking about what a parent needs to know to choose a good school for their particular students, we've included the four-year graduation rate. But I've talked to my school district, and one of my school districts particularly brought this up, that the four-year graduation rate, it counts as people not graduating on time that were not intended to graduate in 4 years. And there's two groups of people that are in this category, and that's what this amendment is addressing. So one group of people is the English language learners. So it's people that are moving into the district, young people, that English is not their first language, and that they're learning English. And in our high schools, the plan is that you get extra years to graduate so that you can have competency in English. And that's basically planned for. So these students, if they graduate in 5 years or 6 years from the ninth grade, could still be on time. And it's also, it's the interrupted formal education. So if you're in a refugee camp, you've lost years of education, and so you can be 18 years old and not have had your years of education. So that's what's being addressed, and that's one group of people. And then there's a second group of people, which is those with a disability and that are on an individual education program. And so again, and I one of on a school board, there's a parent with a child with a learning disability, and that child's plan is to have those extra years of high school before they have to enter the adult world, and that's the plan. So to say they didn't graduate on time when they're seniors is not really reflective of the quality of the high school. And this is actually probably an issue for Minnesota as a state. In another committee, in the higher ed committee, we had testimony from, the group, there's a group that compares higher education systems. You might remember that. And we talked about Minnesota's high school graduation rate, saying that, you know, it doesn't compare very well to other states. And I went back to them and said, you know, how we count graduation rates and how some children, some students stay on after those 4 years, you know, how would that affect our graduation rate? And I had an exchange of emails, and they said it would change up to 3%. That our graduation rate would be 3% higher. So we can see, you know, these two groups of students, English language learners with interrupted education, the students with, you know, that are on the individual learning plan, they are affecting our graduation rates. So if you're a high school that has more of these students than another high school, comparatively, your graduation rate isn't as good. And that's not to have a parent be aware of that, or that not to be reflected in the rating, that information isn't as good for parents. So this is what the amendment is trying to address. I know that, nationally, they just want one way of looking at a graduation rate. And that's, so I know from the department that was what I found out, but, and not to have a different way of looking at it. But I think from a parent's perspective, this would be important information. So that is my amendment, and I hope to have your support.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. What I would have to say today in regard to all of these amendments that deal with Representative Ross Peterson's proposal is that you work with her. I'm going to be recommending no votes on all of these because it's very important that you work with the author, and I think she would be most open to many of the ideas that have been proposed here, or at least some of them. So, members, I'm recommending a no vote. Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair, I think that's unfortunate. The work of the committee is to shape bills. We can clearly shape bills, absolutely, as colleagues when we're not in committee, but that's not happening in front of the public here. It's not happening in a public debate and having an open discussion here. And so I think it's good advice that you're offering for all of us to work with any of our authors on bills, but this is the work of the committee here, and I'm really disappointed that we're going to carte blanche say no to a bunch of ideas here without having a decent and open public debate on it. So I would oppose, encourage support for this amendment if that's the only option before us, since we're not going to be able to have a debate apparently on it.
Representative Mariani, we did hear this bill in this committee. It will be heard again in finance. And I think Representative Peterson is very open to working. These ideas did not come forward earlier, and so I would like to honor her her authorship of the proposal and continue. So let's vote. I renew the motion by Representative Pryor to add A31, and I'm recommending a no vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. No. The motion does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Kunesh Padin offers the A32, or moves the A32 amendment. Please find your amendment and speak to it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A32 amendment would ask to insert that special education student progress means progress towards long-term goals for reading, math, academic rates for students receiving special education service as prescribed by the commissioner under the Approved for Every Student Succeeds Act. And this amendment, let me find my notes here. This would add that special education student progress to the STAR rating system. I think it's really important that when our parents are looking for that perfect school to send their kids to, that they're looking for all the services that their students need, that special education progress is also listed in that STAR rating program. And we look for the overall achievements and ratios and that sort of thing. And when it comes to special education, I think it's just really vital that we are being very transparent and forthwith with that information when it comes to special ed especially. So I would ask you to support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh Padin. You know, in essence, special education is not addressed, and our goal is to come up with one accountability system. So I'm going to recommend a no. Is there any further discussion? Representative Maitland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, when we talked about this bill in committee, there were a number of things that were brought forward by both the parents and the committee members, and the author seemed open to adding those in. Special education was one of them. And one of the things I worry about the most are parents and families who have kids with special needs. One of the things that they ask for often is help. They're often on their own. They're siloed. They are both the advocate, the parent, the caregiver for their children. And so not including special education in this rating leaves out that entire group of parents from knowing what this school could possibly do for their kid. I think by leaving this out, we are both ignoring the testimony that was given in this committee, suggestions that were given by this committee to the author, and an entire swath of Minnesotans that need our support that we should be thinking about today. I think this is a good amendment brought by Representative Kunesh Padin, and without it, we leave out all of special education as if knowing how special education does in a school is not important, and it is. So I urge your support for the amendment.
Representative Kunesh Padin and Representative Naquin, again, I ask that you work with Representative Peterson. Representative Kunesh Padin.
Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll call on this, please.
Roll call has been requested.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, the importance of this kind of amendment, and there are others like this, quite frankly, are to accomplish a couple of things. One is to get some very important information. If we're going to barge ahead with a star rating system created by, I don't know who created it, quite frankly. I know it's a Representative Peterson's bill. We heard testimony the other day that the parent groups were not involved in the creation of that rubric. But if we're going to barge ahead with it, then I think it's really important that we take what we hear in testimony, particularly from parents, about the kind of things they're looking for to properly inform them about our schools. The other thing that this amendment does, and other amendments do, quite frankly, is it points out, you know, what psychometricians, what educators in schools have consistently told us, which is that a single data point is totally inadequate to tell a proper story to anyone about the nature, the characteristics, important things, how a school functions to the public. And that is what the public is asking for. I don't think anyone here is arguing that a summative rating itself is totally objectionable. The issue is, what are the algorithms, what are the mechanics that construct that rating? And what we have before us is, frankly, a summative rating system that's based primarily on a single data point. And so this amendment and others are adding other data points, more information that the public actually cares about. So as we cast our vote, members, I want you to think about that. That, you know, you're going to be saying yes to information that the public wants, more than one data point, or you're voting to just simply provide a single data point on a rubric that was constructed by who knows who.
Members, I also think this would be a good discussion in the Working Group for Special Education. So again, the chair recommends a no vote. All those in favor say, excuse me, roll call requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Newman? No.
Daniels?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
Carr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen? Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup? Kunish-Podine?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
May Quaid?
Yes.
Fryer?
Yes.
Barrett?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being seven ayes and nine nays, the motion does not prevail. It is not adopted. May Quaid, Representative May Quaid offers or moves the A13 amendment. Please explain your amendment once you've found it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this amendment adds the average class size for a school and a district, and it compares it to the average statewide class size by grades to the components of the star rating. One of the things that we hear both from parents and teachers is the importance of individual time with the teacher and the student, and how class size often affects students' ability to learn in the classroom. I can tell you I had teachers in my district who have class sizes that are so big that all of the students can't actually sit in the classroom and see the board all at the same time. So we know class size is important not only to students and teachers, but it's also important to parents. So this amendment would add class sizing as something, an important data point to know, and I would request a roll call vote on this as well.
A roll call vote is requested. Further discussion? Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative May Quaid, I want to thank you for bringing up class size. I think it's very important. And there's some other amendments I know coming up here that are going to discuss school counselor ratio, number of ESL teachers and things. I think those are really important. However, I think we are confusing here the goal with the strategies and then the strategies to reach that goal. And I know a number of us are teachers here, so we know we were taught to make sure we are measuring the outcome, the goal, and not measuring the strategy we choose to get to that goal. For example, when I was teaching reading, I know it's really important for my students to have access to lots of reading material. A good library is really important, but I didn't base my students' grade on access to a good library. I based their grade on their achievement progress. And so this school report card is measuring achievement progress for students. And I think though all these things are really important, class size, those are strategies schools choose to get to that goal of successful students and graduation and that kind of thing. So I think it's important to maybe have these things somewhere where parents can access them on a website, you know, what is the class size, teacher-student ratio, make sure it's truly showing that teacher-student ratio and not the entire school, and, you know, sometimes they like to lump in all of the licensed instructors. But I don't believe it belongs in the school report card because we are measuring student achievement. We're not measuring the way schools are choosing to reach that achievement. Does that make sense? So I think these are important, but I don't believe it belongs in the report card.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I may address that comment from Representative Bennett, which I appreciate, but I'm coming from the perspective of what a parent would know, and I know that that would be something that I, as a parent, I would think is really important to understanding, you know, the report card on my child's school, what the class size is. And I guess I, as a parent, I might even assume that was part of the STAR, and because we know that class size is so important. So I am supportive of amendment.
Madam Chair, Representative McQuaid. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Bennett, I understand what you're saying. I also think that this is actually getting to the heart of why this summative voting was brought to the committee in the first place. We heard testimony from parents saying that they need information to make decisions for their kids about their schools. The information that's being included in the current summative voting as it's currently written is very easily findable. I found it for my entire district last night, school by school, and for the district. So duplicating something that's already findable, not just through whatever site digger or school digger, whatever it is, but actually just findable on both the district's website and through MDE, that doesn't do anything. This is the information we're asking for. These are the types of things that they came and testified in front of this committee that they wanted to know. We want more information that's findable so we can have information about the schools for our kids. How students do on a test is already findable, and that doesn't tell them anything about their kid. Class size tells them stuff about the school. So that's why we're bringing a bunch of these amendments, because it's actually adding them information about schools that parents do ask for, want, and need, and not just putting test scores into a formula and then giving them a star based on proficiency.
Thank you, members. This is not data that is found in the ESSA plan, as we're trying to create one accountability plan. The clerk will take the roll.
Erickson?
No.
Daniels?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Bai?
Yes.
Christensen? Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup?
No.
Kunesh-Podein?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
McQuaid?
Yes.
Pryor?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative McQuaid offers the A22. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this amendment would add in the ratio of teachers of color to the number of students of color to the STAR rating. One of the things we've talked about in this committee and continues to be talked about is how important it is that you have someone who looks like you in positions of power in your classroom. You can't be what you can't see. We have very low percentages of teachers of color, and as we seek to increase that, this is important information, particularly for parents of color when they're looking at sending their kids to school. So I would ask for your support, and I would also ask for a roll call on this.
Roll call has been requested. And this information is found in the world's best workforce, just so you know. So the chair recommends a no vote. Representative Mariani.
I would encourage members to support this. In the past few years, this legislature has begun to open its eyes to the almost total lack of diversity among our teaching corps. Forced across the state, and the chair herself has been supportive of many efforts to better resource our existing system to produce more teachers of color and Indian teachers in Minnesota. The sad truth is that that number hasn't moved in 30 years. That percentage hasn't moved in 30 years, even though our our student population. In 30 years has gone, students of color and American Indian students have gone from less than 10% to a third now of our publicly enrolled students. Meanwhile, the diversity of teachers that come from their own, from those communities and reflect those students has stayed static between 3% and 4% for 30 years in a row. And so finally, in the last couple of years, we have really reopened their eyes, and it's been a bipartisan effort to the importance of this and the need to do something, you know, that can accelerate that. This amendment basically allows the public, particularly parents, to be part of our effort of holding the state of Minnesota accountable based on information about their very specific school in terms of how they're doing with that effort. You know, members, the two groups that came and testified on behalf of the star rating system were the business partnership, and they repeatedly said that the purpose of, you know, why they're doing this is because they want parents to have information that parents most require. The parents that were brought to testify said, we need information. They didn't say, we just want to know about the MCA test scores. They said, we need a bunch of information. And so, again, you know, this amendment and others are about responding to the very arguments that the business partnership and the parents, including parents of color, gave in this committee through at least a couple of hearings. And so I say that we should listen to the parents. I suppose we should listen to the business partnership when they say what the purpose is, and this purpose matches up with it. So I don't see the issue here. I think we ought to support this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Again, we're working toward one accountability system, and this can be found in the World's Best Workforce. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I very much support this amendment, and I happened to be, as I was driving up yesterday from Northfield, I listened to a discussion on public radio about a recent study from the University of Virginia that extensive research that showed that African-American young men and boys always fall behind. They don't have the success rate that other groups do. And attributed this to a systemic problem that we need to face. And I think this approach, this idea, is a systemic answer or way of addressing this issue. And it concerns me that, you know, we continually kind of look at the school as the one answer to this problem when we need to be looking systemically at the problem. And school is one place in our society that we can address it. We heard from the business partnership about the opportunity gap or the gap that exists already and that the desire to address that. But, you know, my opinion has been and has always been that the single test or a test result does not adequately measure the school's efforts to try to address the systemic problem. And so parents who look at just the test scores or just a single rating and say, I know that's the school for me, may discover that that is not the case, that the school may not be welcoming, that the school may not reach out to them and may not be willing to make the systemic changes that are important. I don't know. That's just a guess. But I think it's important that we continue to communicate to parents in as many ways as we can that there is not a single measure. There's not a one way to look at a school. And when I asked Mr. Bartholomew about this rating system, and he indicated that you know, they'd have to get more information, they'd have to go somewhere else. Well, what is the purpose of the single you know, star rating if it's the expectation is that parents will go further and understand the complexity complexity of the school and whether or not it's friendly and it's trying to do the systemic change. I don't understand, you know, there may be parents out there looking for that star rating that will tell them, but it's not going to tell them what they need to know unless they go further and are that's communicated to them. It seems to me that what was described to us, how the dashboard will work, it's all kind of in one place, and you can look deeper very quickly and very easily into other things in addition to going to the school and looking at it. So I think this is extremely important. I think that we need to be talking about what systemic changes can we make to improve the situation that we see. If we look at the future of our state and the complexity that we are going to be embracing as the population changes, this is perhaps the most important issue we need to face, and I hope that we do so. Thank you.
Representative Blythe, thank you for those insightful remarks. I hope you will talk to Representative Peterson, and please remember that this information can be found in the World's Best Workforce Plan. Roll call has been requested. Please call the roll.
Minister Erickson?
No.
Daniels?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen? Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup? Kunish Bodine?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Make Wade?
Yes.
Fryer?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl? Ward?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 9 nays, the motion the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Bly moves the A23 amendment. Please explain your amendment, Representative Bly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment would include the ratio of school counselors into the that a school in a student's school to add to the rating system. And again, I could repeat what I already said, that this is an issue of trying to make sure that the school is putting in place the kind of systemic changes that need to be there to improve the opportunity gap that exists in our schools and in our society as well. I think over the years we have seen a decline in this ratio of counselors to students. I think as a society changes, the need and the use of school counselors is going to change, and the need for them is going to be even greater. And I think parents have a right to know what that ratio is. So this is the purpose of my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Bly. You make a good point, and I hope you will visit with Representative Loon, because she is working on both counselors, nurses, social workers. She has proposals to come forward in that, and I know you're not on finance, but Representative Mariani is, and so please share that with him. Representative Bly.
I'd like to get a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, it was Counselor's Day at the Capitol not too long ago, and my counselor from my school was in my office because she's my constituent now. And we were sitting there and we were talking, and she said, you know, the thing I did for you, what she did for me was I had all these aspirations. I was going to go to NYU or Georgetown or Notre Dame. And then as it got closer and closer to making that decision, I got closer and closer to home until I was just 20 minutes away in St. Paul at St. Thomas. And it was because of Ms. Sherman that I chose to go to St. Thomas, or at least apply. And she said, I don't get to do that for kids anymore. Just sit down and ask them, what are your plans? What are you going to do? And make a suggestion, like, maybe you have a school that's close to home just in case. Because what she's dealing with now is a kid who's freaking out and crying and having to sit in, like, a fishbowl where everyone can see him, because she has another student in her office that's also freaking out and crying, because students are dealing with an insane amount of mental health issues. And we don't have enough counselors. We know that. But this is something that not only parents want to know, but students want to know too. Students ask me all the time why they don't have more counselors in schools, and this metric in particular can help parents understand, will the school have the type of support that my student needs? So thank you, Representative Bly, for bringing this. Members, I really urge us to consider this. This is the work that the committee was sent here to do. you know, Chair Erickson, you keep mentioning that all of this is found on gross best workforce, so is proficiency scores. If we're going to measure schools, then we should measure them by the things that are important to parents and students, as we have been told over and over again.
Thank you, members, and please continue to visit with Representative Loon, as she's bringing forth some very good proposals, and she's working very hard to accomplish this. I, too, visited with interns and counselors this past week, and was delighted to hear the good work they're doing and how our students who are in our college programs are coming forward. But the chair still recommends a no vote. The clerk will take the roll.
Daniel? Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen? Glassell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup? Kunish-Podin?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
May-Quade?
Yes.
Fire?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Lee offers the A24 amendment. Please explain your amendment, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is similar to the Representative Quaid amendment earlier. It adds to the primary school rating components the ratio of teachers licensed by Pelsby or approved by their districts to teach English learner students to the number of English learner students. To the number of English learner students. I want to say thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad to see that EL students' performance were included in the overall rating, but I think it may be more meaningful to our parents of EL students to know that there are enough staff in the building who are qualified to teach their children. The amendment will add this rating to the factor used to calculate the overall star rating, and it will not require this information to be reported separately. And Madam Chair, I'd like to request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Thank you, Representative Lee. Remember, and you did compliment the fact that we have English language learners now in the reading system, and that's very good. I'm not sure to what extent the ratio would make a difference. The clerk will take the roll.
Madam Chair Erickson?
No.
Daniel?
No.
Mariani?
Si.
Barr? Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen? Glassell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup?
No.
Kunish-Podin?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
May-Quade?
Yes.
Fire?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
Nine.
Ward?
Yes.
It's good to know we have 3 languages known here at the table. There being 7 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Mariani offers the A26 amendment. Please explain your amendment.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to ask for a roll call on this amendment, but I do want to use it to offer the committee a quite frankly, what could be a bipartisan and open way for us to do what pretty much everyone is telling us we ought to do, except for one special interest group that we heard from. This committee, in the past few minutes, just said no, you know, to adding to a single data point summative system, additional data points, some that parents, some who came in Spanish, spoke in Spanish to us, told us were important to them. We said no to including teachers of color measurements. We said no to including counselor racials and measurements. We said no to special ed dimensions, to the summative rating. We said no to understanding four-year graduation rates to the summative rating. We said no to class size to the summative rating. And we just said no to the EL diversity of the teaching force core community in any given school. And so basically we've just been saying no to things that we spent a whole lot of time hearing from other folks and discussing among ourselves that are vitally important. And instead we're continually opting for that one single data point based on summative standardized test scores, which quite frankly the public accepts that the public also has incredible and rightfully so nervousness about using that single data point as such a huge determiner for what we ought to expect our public education system to do effectively with our students. So, Madam Chair, we heard from the committee, or rather from the department, that there is a stakeholder group that has been working on providing a well-informed tool that could be easy to use. We heard Dr. Nolan from MREA step up and describe very briefly what that thing is starting to look like, which really is, you know, on one page, a simple, digestible, but powerful series of information that includes some of the things perhaps that I just mentioned that we said no to powerfully inform parents in the state of Minnesota about the nature of their schools. And that stakeholder group is working on that. My amendment would replace our proposal before us to use a single data point summative measurement that doesn't include any of the things that we just talked about, and instead require the department to get that dashboard done. And to get it done, it's a very aggressive and assertive amendment. It's saying you need to get this done soon, and you need to report back to us what it is. The department is actually not totally comfortable with my aggressive posture, but I think it is important that we push our executive branch to move forward in developing that well-rounded tool. So, members, we can go down this path of creating and empowering and putting into the state statute a flawed tool that pretty much everyone except one interest group came forward, not as a result of a stakeholder process, certainly not as a result of parents, parent organizations asking for that. I suspect that our constituents, all of us, no matter where we live, what they want is something that's usable, something that's digestible, something that empowers them. The summative star rating system does not do that. The dashboard tool that the department is working on, with the input of a diversity of stakeholders from across the state, has the potential to do that. And by the way, that stakeholder group may involve a summative tool of some type as a part of that. I suspect that if they do, they'll do a summative tool based on the kind of amendments we had here before. In other words, based on the kind of information that Minnesotans want and expect to be transparently put before them so that they can have a good, quick assessment of how effective their schools are. So, members, I'm not going to request a roll call vote. I offer this as a really good, inclusive attempt for us to move forward sound public policy and not the flawed tool that we have before us.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. I understand what you're saying. I would disagree that the proposal by Representative Peterson is a flawed system. I think it needs massaging and input from all of you. The dashboard is stalled, and I read the latest report from the stakeholders, and they're at odds on what should be in the dashboard and how it should progress. So, members, I'm recommending a no vote on this with due respect to Representative Mariani, Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I think the way that we do education policy in Minnesota has been very much about local control. And the reason is because what works in Apple Valley is not always what works in Zimbabwe. And we leave our school districts to figure that out. Similarly, what works for my nieces who live up in Duluth is not what my sister-in-law down in Jeffers, Minnesota needs to know about schools for my nieces and nephews there.
Affirmative reading would assume that all parents only need to know the proficiency of math and reading for the school to make decisions. And that's not what parents need to know. We made an attempt with a lot of these things, and Representative Mariani went over them. There were so many more we had ideas for. What would have been a good school for me might have been different than what would have been a good school for my brother. And we were born and raised by the same parents. So to assume that this summative reading was in any way helpful for the diverse and wonderful families and students of Minnesota is it goes against everything we have set up our education policy to do. It goes against everything we've ever heard a parent come and testify about what is helpful for them. It goes against everything that has been said about from students what is helpful for them in schools. And so this, again, like Representative Mariani said, with the exception of one special interest group, when the principals and the school board members and the rural school board members and the parents and the teachers and the counselors, when they all get up and tell you that this is not good, we should listen. That is the work of this committee. I'm not sure why a business partnership with no partnership with parents or the department coming forward with this very flawed proposal that cherishes and the minute needs to be massaged, and you encourage us to give input to the author. This is our input. It needs to be different in order for it to even resemble something that's helpful for parents. And I'm hoping that that we can get this dashboard up so that parents can find the information that they need to say if the school is good for their students. So I urge us to adopt this amendment.
Members, I still recommend a no vote with all due respect to Representative Mariani. And keep in mind that, you know, you can look at the world's best workforce for each of your districts. That's very much local control. And as Representative Mariani suggested, there probably will be some kind of summative information included in the dashboard. But let's proceed to our vote. All those in favor of the A26 amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed say no. No. The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative McQuaid offers the A39 amendment. Please explain your amendment, Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So members, you know, I talked about this a little bit in previous committees, but the way that the current STAR rating calculates the gap between students of color is it takes students of color in a school, and then it compares their proficiency in reading and math to white students statewide. And that does not show a gap. It's not indicative for parents or students to know what the gap is in that school. So I'll give you an example. In ISD 196, if you put all students of color together, which in and of itself is a problem, but if we did that, for our math proficiency, we are at about 58%. Statewide, white students are at 68%. So using the current calculation we have in law, it would assume that there's a 10% gap between students of color and white students in our district. But in our district, white students read at a much higher, or have a math proficiency that's much higher, and there is a gap of 18%. So the way that this current calculation works doesn't show the true gap in that school. So this amendment would modify the calculations to compare students in a school to students in a school to show the true gap. That is true for both low income and it's true for students of color. If we're going to go forward with these very small three data points that are already available and the summative rating, we should at least be comparing the students in the school to each other and students in the district to each other so that parents can at least get accurate information.
Thank you.
And I would request a roll call on this amendment.
A roll call has been requested, and Representative McQuaid, be sure you talk to Representative Peterson about this change, because I believe you'd be lowering expectations if you chose to delete statewide and go to A schools. The clerk will take the roll.
Madam Chair Erickson?
No.
Daniel?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen? Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup?
No.
Kunesh-Podin?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
McQuaid?
Yes.
Fryer?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 9 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Liu offers the A27 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A27 amendment adds the definition of students of color achievement gap score and requires the student of color achievement gap score to be calculated individually for each racial category of students rather than as an aggregate score for all students of color. And I believe that calculating a school's star rating based on students of color as a whole rather than based on individual racial categories may not be helpful to some parents of students of color. For example, school may serve its Hispanic population well, but not for Asian American or African American students. And this should be taken into account in the star rating system. And Madam Chair, I'd like to request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. And Representative Liu, this is a pretty good idea that you should discuss with Representative Rasmussen, because I think she would consider this, but this is not the place to make that change. The clerk will take the roll.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mayquaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to speak to this amendment, members, I mentioned just previously, if we did all students of color in our district, we'd be about 58% proficient in math, but that is not information that's helpful for parents of color. So if they're Hispanic, it's at 39%. That's very different than 58%. If they're black, that's 42%. That's very different than 58%. If they're native, they're at 64%. Also very different than 58%. People of color are not a monolith, and to put them all in one group and pretend that they are is super offensive. So please adopt this amendment, because this is not information that is helpful for parents of color or people of students of color, because they're not all the same. And so comparing or lumping us all together and then averaging it out is really, really unhelpful. And I urge us to at least acknowledge that racial groups are different, and that if parents are looking for this information, it should be more specific than just students of color.
And Representative Quaid, that is something you need to talk to Representative Peterson about, because I think she would be very interested in hearing your approach on this. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things that concerns me about this is that, and this doesn't necessarily directly relate to what Representative Lee is trying to accomplish, but this is another reason in my mind why the testing, the MCA testing, is not a good measure for what kind of school might be good for a student of color, because there has been some research done about this kind of testing that shows that it's not really culturally sensitive, and that when we have students with different cultural backgrounds, I think it's very difficult to say that this is the measure that we should use to determine whether or not this is the best school for a Hmong student or an African American student or a Hispanic student. I think we need to be more careful about what the kind of communication we're giving. And I know I can anticipate you're wanting me to talk to Representative Peterson, but I'm not sure, you know, when the impetus of this measure is that we use this kind of measurement to tell us whether a good school is good or not, doesn't get at the hidden information, doesn't get at other things. So I have a problem with using that kind of test result that does not necessarily measure. Just as a little comment, my wife recently for a couple of years now, she's worked in a remediation program that helps immigrant students learn better, and many of the things that are used to help them learn the skills of reading and math are not culturally sensitive, and they will ask questions or mention things, and the students have no clue. No clue what's being asked or what's being talked about. That's not a reflection on the test necessarily, but I think it just shows how sensitive we need to be to cultural differences. Thank you.
Yes, and Representative Bly, you make a good statement, you know, and that's the burden we place on our teachers, is to understand cultural competency is that ability for parents and educators to work together to understand some of these nuances. And, you know, that's a responsibility we place now on our teachers. But I think if you would visit with Jennifer Dugan from our department, who heads testing, and all of her work groups that she's had, or those of us who've come together of all ethnicities, to look at test questions that they're very sensitive at the department in the testing area to make sure that our questions are culturally sensitive. So I think, you know, I salute our department testing division. And as I said earlier, I think, yes, that you should talk to Representative Peterson. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like some clarification. I think that our constituents expect us to have a robust conversation about what is before us. And my understanding is that this is the chair's and the committee's omnibus bill. And so I don't understand why we can't offer friendly amendments and have them address the issues of the bill, or if it's going to be set up so that the original author of the sections of this bill is particularly Representative Peterson's name has come out multiple times because of the star rating issues, then perhaps she should have been invited to come to this hearing and let us have that conversation. You know, this time of session with deadlines, for all of us to go and track down Representative Peterson or even try to have a meeting with her, for all of us to be at the same place at the same time to have a conversation about these things would be very, very difficult. And I really thought that's why we were here today, to address these things. So if you could help me understand that, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, Representative Ward and members, when we hear bills in here, as we did Representative Peterson's academic achievement rating system, that is the time when we purge, when we modify. These amendments should have come forth then, and she would have taken away an understanding of some of your concerns. Now it's going to have to be dealt with in the Finance Committee as it becomes part of a larger omnibus bill. And in the meantime, we have time to visit with her about any of our concerns, and so, you know, this is just the way things are when it comes down to hearing bills. That's the time when you really dig in, and that's when the author is here. We can't expect her to be here today because we don't take testimony. So, you know, I'm saying you need to visit with her. I think she's very open. I just visited with her yesterday. She wants to hear from you. How can she make this idea, this concept, better? And if it goes forward, how will it be the best for our students? Representative Makewaite.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ward.
Follow up, please.
Yes.
Many of these ideas, or in fact, almost all of them, did come up in our conversation. And some of them were a matter of discovery. The agenda that I'm bringing forward was really a matter of, wow, this is new information. So we would not have been in a position to understand well enough some of these things. Sometimes we say, would you accept this as a friendly amendment at the moment? But I thought this was the time that we would be doing some of these things. So what you're saying is that we should make these conversations with the various authors.
Yes.
And before the Finance Committee meeting, so that how would Representative Peterson amend this? How does that work?
Well, I can't speak for Representative Peterson, but she has brought forth a proposal that is complex but refined. And if we start amending that today without input, then we are essentially gutting the proposal that she's brought forth. And I don't believe that we do that to any member's bill without the member having input.
Okay.
So,
excuse me, Madam Chair. So we talk with her, and then how my question is processed. Then she comes to you or Representative Loon and makes the amendments, or how is that going to be implemented?
Representative Boyd, she serves on the Finance Committee.
Okay.
So she will, she'll hear your ideas, she'll figure out if they can be worked into this concept that she has, and, you know, she's a very cordial, open legislator, and she's going to be wanting to hear these concerns, and improve the bill if it goes forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a suggestion that might work. Yesterday, I met with all the DFL members of my Capital Investment Committee and listened to, you know, various suggestions about what we should be doing going forward. Perhaps you could try to line up a meeting with Representative Peterson with the DFL members and, you know, talk about your amendments with her and see where you go from there.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Very wise. Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to piggyback off of what Representative Ward said, I mean, committee work is how we make bills better. That's why we do it in public. And this is no longer Representative Peterson's bill. It's your bill now. It's in an omnibus. The bill number is your bill. It's you're the author of this bill, and that's why we're doing this here in committee. And when we had the committee meeting about Representative Peterson's bill, at the very end, I still had many questions for her, and you looked down at it and you shook your head, and then you moved on. And so the opportunity to do that work came and went, and so we are now, this is part of your omnibus bill, trying to do the work that was brought up in two committee sessions about Representative Peterson's bill. Having a meeting with eight different members, nine different members of the committee, doesn't mean that it gets included, and how do we then have the accountability to know that it moves forward? Because once it's gone from this committee, it's gone from our ability to impact this legislation. And so, you know, bills don't exist only in the existence of the author. They get shaped by the legislators of this body. As more perspectives are brought in, that's why we represent a specific area of the state. We bring that knowledge, and it shapes policy. It doesn't only go through the author. And so I'm disappointed that we can't use the committee time for the purpose of committee time, which is to shape bills to more fully reflect the needs and values of the state.
Thank you, and those amendments could have been offered when the bill was heard. Thank you. The roll call will be taken.
Madam Chair Erickson?
No.
Daniels? Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen? Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup? Punish Podine?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Make Way?
Yes.
Meyer?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being seven nays and nine noes, the amendment, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Pryor offers the A-17. Please explain your amendment, Representative Pryor. This is the one that deals with lead and water.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, this, what we heard in testimony and had a very long and insightful discussion on was whether or not, what we know that there is lead in the water and the drinking water in our schools. And what this amendment would do is one that when it's tested and discovered that there is lead, that parents should still be notified of that. And this is a perspective of a parent. If the test is being done, and if that's the discovery, parents should be able to know that. Now, it doesn't say that it can't be put into a context of other situations of lead in the water, but at least a parent should know, because we know that from the testimony from the health department, there isn't a standard that says this much lead is safe and this much lead is not safe. And given that there is no standard, parents need to be fully informed about the water in their children's schools. And I think that's something that we should be requiring. It's something that should probably be worked with so that parents can understand the implication of it. But at least this idea of notification, I think, should still be on our bill. So I urge support for this amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. This is not a very well-written amendment, I must say. If you read the first sentence, there's something missing. But members, if you recall, when we heard this testimony from the Health Department, from Minneapolis Public Schools and others interested. My charge to them was to work this out. And so I'm expecting that they'll work this out. It is not ready for today. That's okay. What we want is things worked out so that they are the best possible policies that we can enact. So, members, I'm recommending a no vote.
Madam Chair, I do request a roll call. Thank you.
A roll call is requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Madam Chair Erickson?
No.
Daniel?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen? Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup? Kunesh Pudding?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Makeway?
Yes.
Pryor?
Yes.
Weirich?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being seven ayes and nine nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Kunesh Pudding, Representative Kunesh Pudding, moves the A20 amendment. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment removes the pathway to a Tier 3 license that would allow a teacher to qualify with only 3 years of teaching experience under Tier 2 licensure, and evidence that their summative teaching and evaluations did not result in placing them on an improvement plan. So what this bill would do would allow an unlicensed teacher to continue teaching. Well, I would say an instructor, because they are not a licensed teacher yet, to continue teaching our students without that licensure. And I think what we do here in our committee is try to ensure that we are putting in place guidelines and expectations for the best teachers that we have, that we can have. And we've had many discussions about how great our teachers are, how wonderful Minnesota teachers are, how hardworking teachers are. What this bill would do, or what this would allow the teachers or people to come into the schools without all of the necessary training and experience that a licensed teacher has. I don't know how many of you know what it takes to get a teaching license. If you were to go to St. Cloud State University, you would need to complete 89 credits for your teaching license. With the way that thing, this bill would allow those teachers at that Tier 2 to move into a Tier 3 position without taking all the necessary classes and experiences that a licensed teacher has. So, for example, a simple introductory education class, Introduction to Education, introduces the students to a broad field of education, including a focus on children and families, the role of the teacher, the role of schools and educational programs in communities and the broader society, history, philosophy of education, education futures, teaching education knowledge base, and contemporary issues. And this also includes a field experience in different area schools. That's just one of the expectations of a licensed teacher. With this bill, person could come into a school and never have had that really important basic experience at the university level. And so at a time when we have high expectations for our students, we expect them to be career ready, shouldn't we also insist that the professionals, the people that we are putting in front of our students in our schools, have proof that they have that necessary experience and expertise, and the credits that we expect all of our students to show proficiency in? Shouldn't we also have our educators that we are so proud of also have to experience? And so I take great almost offense to this bill. I think of all of the work that I personally have done to become the best teacher that I can become. I think of all the debt that I racked up as a single parent
making sure that I had all the licensure experience and expectations, passing the test to prove that, I had experienced all the education that I need, that I went in and did my student teaching and learned hands-on really what it takes. And what this bill would allow would be an expert in some area to come into our schools and eventually stay there indefinitely. And maybe all they would have to do is take a class to show, you know, a class every now and then to show that, yeah, they're working towards that proficiency, but maybe their goal really is not to ever get a teaching license. They could do this forever and ever and ever. Take one class a year, show that they're working towards their proficiency, and never even actually get that teaching licensure. So I would very strongly ask you all to vote no on this, or vote to support, my brain is so racing right now, to support this amendment and remove that pathway to Tier 3, because the solution is not to make it easier to be a teacher. The solution is to make sure that we have those high standards with real applicable experience behind all of our pedagogy and the way that we are building strong schools for a strong future in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative.
And I as the roll call was requested, yes.
Well, members, remember that this was in the Senate omnibus bill last year, and we had a lot of debate and discussion about it, in open to the public. Many of you attended, who are in the audience, I know. This was signed by the governor. And, you know, I really think experience counts. When I went to teacher prep, there was nothing to it because I majored in my major. So I had to count on a lot of experience. And I think 3 years of experience with a summative evaluation, which I know Education Minnesota honors because they argued against our repeal of the default for teacher layoffs last year based on teacher evaluation, but that's very important. So members, I'm recommending a no vote since this has gone through the process. Experience counts, and so does the teacher evaluation, and I'm quoting Education Minnesota on that. That's very important. So if we've accomplished that, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I do respect your perspectives on this. I was part of that debate during our conference committee. I'm struck by the fact that the amendment before us is actually holding the House's position from last year. And, you know, someone who voted for your bill and supported the final passage, there weren't very many of us, quite frankly, on my side of the aisle that did that. There were elements of this structure that made me uncomfortable. I totally buy and accept the idea that what we should be doing in our state is really opening that gate as people are coming in wider. I think that's going to be a wise move for us over time. But the whole architecture, particularly from the House's perspective, your bill, Madam Chair, was to consistently ratchet up the level of expectation and quality and standardizations of quality as we move from tier to tier. And unfortunately, what the Senate leveraged us into was extending out the more open part of that architecture into the latter part, for the 2 or 3 and 4, or 2 or 3 in particular, that our wisdom was we should be setting higher standardized quality standards once we get to that. You know, the whole purpose of Tier 2 was to allow teaching, competent good folks to teach while they're preparing for Tier 3, through those standardized, uniform, high-quality standards. And, you know, I know the nuance, you know, may go over the head of most folks in the public, but a summative evaluation on the part of one principal is going to be different than the evaluation that's handed out by another principal in another part of the state. And so it really does violate this notion of us holding toward the latter end a consistent standardization of high quality expectations. And so I think, you know, I love our architecture. I love that it's opening up the front end. I've gotten a ton of grief from important stakeholders in my own political community over that. But I still think it's a wise thing for us to do. I don't think it's wise to continue to perpetuate that that non-standardized openness as we move up into Tier 3 and Tier 4. Madam Chair, as you move through the system, you met those standards. You no doubt were a good instructor. Unfortunately, you know, we didn't require evaluations in the state.
Some districts did evaluated me.
Some districts did and some didn't. And I suspect you had a lot of peers that were moving through the system without ever having an evaluation. I'm glad that we dispensed with that. But similarly, you know, I think we should apply that high standardized expectation of our Tier 3. Certainly we do it with Tier 4. This is a really good amendment. It's only going to strengthen the teaching profession in our state and provide our students with what we need. I really encourage us to go back to where the House and we were at as we came out of here last year, heading into conference committee, and force the Senate to argue once again why we would not have those high stakes, those high expectations for Tier 3.
Thank you, Representative Mariani, but you know how negotiations work. We both give a little bit, and I acceded to this, and it's in the law, and the governor signed the bill, and my position would be that there be a no vote on this amendment. And a roll call has been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Madam Chair Erickson?
No.
Daniels?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
Marr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen? Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup? Cornish Podine?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
May Quay?
Yes.
Pryor?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
Yes.
Ward?
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Members on a tie vote, an amendment does not prevail. I want to take a second to recognize some visitors from Princeton. As you all know, I live near Princeton in Princeton Township, and I'm a member of the Princeton Chamber of Commerce, and we have leadership today visiting our committee, touring the Capitol, observing a Senate gallery session. So I'd like those visiting from Princeton, Minnesota's Chamber of Commerce to please stand. Thank you very much, Princeton Chamber, for coming in. I will join you later. What we're doing is we're amending the Omnibus Policy Bill, which is under my authorship. It's a combination of many members' bills. And the one we were just debating was based on a provision that was enacted last year to change the way teachers are licensed. And not necessarily the way they're licensed, but the system. We moved to a tier system instead of continuing to layer state law with many different variations for how a teacher could be licensed in Minnesota. But welcome, and we'll continue this debate. We're still in the amendments. Representative Erdahl.
Did you teach any of them?
Yes, Florence, I taught you. And behind me?
Tracy.
Tracy, yes, thank you.
And Tammy.
Well, of course, yes. Can't see you.
If you remember the grades, you could even.
I'm pretty sure Florence earned an A. I think Tracy probably earned an A.
Tammy, maybe.
Oh, no, I think they were all, these ladies were really good, yes. And they're still very good in our community today. They work so hard. Florence has numerous obligations, Mille Lacs County Fair, the American Dairy Association from the Mille Lacs perspective. She's an every parade onion because she brings the ambassadors for the Dairy Association. I could go down the line. We have the business manager from Princeton School District. Very good to see you here. And Nancy from, she manages the municipal, and we have industry represented here, so thank you very much. Members, Representative Mariani moves the 835 amendment. Please explain the amendment.
Madam Chair, the 835 amendment goes to the PELSB, the Professional Educator Licensing Board, which we created in statute last year to replace the Board of Teaching and to help modernize the process by which teachers get licensed in our state. Madam Chair, I have a couple of questions. I thought I had sent a letter to the committee for distribution on this. Do we have it? I don't have it in my packet.
Either. We just received it from Mars.
Okay.
So I think it might have to come later.
Okay. Madam Chair, that letter is a letter from PELSB itself, and it's signed by a number of statewide, we'll see that in a second, the statewide education associations, school principals, I better not name names because it's, you know how that goes when you try to name someone, you know, like at a wedding or something, and then you forget, you know, Uncle Tom, and you hear about it for the next 5 years. But the letter's coming around. Madam Chair, the issue is this, and we do have someone from the PELSB, from the board here, the interim director, Alex, is here. We've not had a discussion in committee about this, and yet this is vitally, vitally important. So when we structured the board in the new tier system, one of the things that we did is we set a very aggressive timetable by which the board would then implement the new tier licensing system for the sake of making decisions about candidates' requests to be licensed at whatever level they would be licensed at. And I'm sure you remember, you recall no doubt, that in the conference committee there was quite a bit of debate about whether or not that timetable, which is set for July of this year, was a realistic timetable, given the fact that we were moving this board, creating a brand new board, including brand new members. We are moving it out of from underneath the Department of Education's physical space, as well as clearing up some of the divided functions in regards to teacher licensing, which we agree was creating a heck of a lot of confusion and lack of accountability in our state. All of that meant that creating something new like this is a really big endeavor. And it was my position, and the position of a number of us, that we really needed to give this board more time than the July 2018 deadline. Nonetheless, the board, the prior board, went ahead and moved to engage the public and broad stakeholders in helping it to set up its rules for administering the new system, and had public meetings, et cetera. Unfortunately, an administrative law judge, and I'm simplifying a little bit, basically said, you know, you're going to have to start all over again because come January, you're a brand new board, so you have to start from scratch. Even though a ton of stakeholders have already been involved, that has really complicated the ability of this board to be able to fulfill its statutorily mandated directive to implement this new system in July. And we can agree to disagree about whether, you know, it should have moved even faster, differently, or whatever. The bottom line numbers is that if this board doesn't have its ducks in order come July, it has no choice but to implement the system, whether it's, you know, it's crossed all its T's and dotted its I's. And here's the issue. It opens the state of Minnesota up to some potentially serious liability issues as folks who may disagree or have questions about decisions relative to their own candidacy for licensure, they may come forward and sue the state. And we don't want to invite that. We want the system to work. We have a good tier system. I had an issue with the two or three. We won't continue that. But I think basically we have a good approach here. We really need to make sure that it works. And so basically what my amendment does is it gives that board the time to be able to competently, professionally, responsibly structure its rules to make sure that every person who's coming forward, for their licensing, will have a fair, objective, and powerful way to have that decision made and not have to resort to suing the state of Minnesota in court because the rules were incomplete. And if you don't think that won't happen, members, it's happened before. You know, I mean, we had litigation even under the prior board. And it makes sense. You know, stakes are high for folks. It's their livelihood. It's their profession. We owe it to them to make sure that our Pelsby board has solid rules to make decisions about their profession and their desired willingness to teach our students. So, Madam Chair, that's all really my amendment does. It gives the time for the board to carry out its responsibilities responsibly. And Madam Chair, we do have the interim director from the Pelsby board here. We've not had this discussion at all this legislative session, even though it's a huge and looming issue that should have been, quite frankly, at center stage of all our discussions throughout this year. It would be good, Madam Chair, I think, to hear from the interim director about why this is important, and perhaps even Willem on why, you know, he feels and the board feels that at this point they're really at risk of not fulfilling the mandate, not because they don't want to, but because time has worked against them.
Thank you, Representative Marion. You are not taking testimony today, and the interim director has been present at many meetings and could have come forth and offered any advice that he wanted to bring on behalf of the board. And Representative Mariani, I am disappointed in the letter of the signers because not a one of these has come to me to express their concern that the July 1, 2018 date will not be a good time to implement this. Representative Mariani, I started last fall working with the Board of Teaching, of which you know I'm a former member, on the rules. They had rules ready. We discussed them at two specific meetings. Senator Pratt and I gave input, as did Minnesota School Boards Association, Ed Allies, other groups that I see in the audience were present and gave input. Our expectation was that when January 1 rolled around and the new board took over, that they would reconstitute the rules on which they had worked, to which we had given input, submit suggestions. I even met in my office with the interim director and one of the board members to propose that they go forward with the rules without violating state statute, which they were doing on about three of them, and that seemed very promising. But the administrative law judge has laid out for us, or for the board, I should say, a roadmap. so that these rules can be in place July 1 of this year, so that we have the tiered system in place. And to that extent, I think we need to move forward. Maybe something will change in the future, but I don't think so, because the board is negating the responsibility that they have, and that's to take those rules that have them in front of them and move forward. And it is possible, based on the ALJ's recommendation, it is possible to accomplish this. So with that said, Representative Mariani, I'm recommending a no vote on your amendment. Yeah. Representative Mariani.
Chair, it's unfortunate that the chair will not take testimony, because there is a lot of information that's missing for the members here. Quite frankly, Madam Chair, the ALJ's decision sets up a totally unrealistic timeline. You know as well as many of us here that part of the rulemaking process involves providing prescribed time of notice for the public to be able to weigh in. It's how we invite as legislators and executive branch, the public to be part of the process of making vitally important decisions, which is what rules are. It's how we breathe life into laws. It's how we implement the laws. It's vitally important that we get that right. And so our rulemaking process has both a long and an expedited timetable in which we can do that. What the ALJ has laid out for the Pelsby Board is totally unrealistic. And probably not surprisingly, because quite frankly, in my opinion, not my opinion, my experience, as great as ALJs are, ministerial law judges are, they're not always experts in the given field that's in front of them. And so, Madam Chair, there's more to say about that, but the bottom line here is that we can put our head in the sand on this issue. And quite frankly, what we're doing is rolling the dice with whether or not our entire tier system could collapse in and on itself through litigation that can come forward. I don't know why any member, I don't care what party you're at, would not take the steps necessary to avoid litigation on something so vitally important. And Madam Chair, I don't think the Pelsby Board is attempting to negate its duties whatsoever. They moved expeditiously. You were involved, as you shared with us, as were others, in helping them move and weighing in. And unfortunately, and I don't know the details of that, but we should hear from the interim director, we had an action come forward to challenge the very process by which they were engaging the public and then having an adverse decision saying, you know what, you can't use most of that. You're going to have to go over that ground all over again. Oh, and by the way, here's a timetable. It's totally unrealistic for you to follow in order to meet that July deadline. It seems to me the only logical thing we should do and the only responsible thing we should do is to extend the timeout so we get this right. We're not changing anything in the tier system. We just simply want to get this right. And Madam Chair, I'm disappointed that you would not entertain this. I don't know when during the last few weeks we would have had an opportunity for the Pelsby Board to come forward, because there wasn't a bill, on the Pelsby Board on this issue. At this time, I introduced a bill. We didn't get a hearing on the bill, And so this is our only recourse, is to offer an amendment as we're constructing this omnibus bill. So, Madam Chair, I'm going to ask for a roll call for this bill. I think this amendment, I think it's really critically important, and I think it's important that the public knows who's taking a responsible posture relative to making sure that the law that we're implementing, that we created, in a bipartisan manner, will actually work, and whether or not we are going to invite litigation or avoid litigation this year on this line. So I ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested, and keep in mind the governor did sign this bill. The governor did sign it, and even in his first letter He did not cite that this was an unworkable timeline. The clerk will call the roll.
Madam Chair Erickson?
No.
Daniel? Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen? Glassell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup? No. Kunesh-Podein?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Makeway?
Yes.
Breyer?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being seven ayes and nine noes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Members, we will stand in recess until the call of the chair of 5 p.m. in room 200. And there is a press conference going on outside the speaker. Good evening, everyone. Our meeting will reconvene. This is Education Innovation Policy, Part 2. And to my DFL colleagues, I talked to Representative Ross Peterson. She'd be very happy to visit with you about your concerns regarding the star rating system. So please know that it's an open invitation. We'll resume with amendments. Representative Lee offers the A34. Please explain your amendment.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Madam Chair. The A34 amendments as to the Article 3, defining cultural competency training for the purposes of the chair licensure system as a training program that promotes self-reflection and discussion on racial, cultural, and social economic groups, American Indian students, implicit bias, systemic racism, gender identity, including transgender students, sexual orientation, language diversity, and individuals with disabilities. This also requires these training programs to be designed to increase teachers' understanding of these topics and their ability to implement this knowledge for students, families, and the school community. This definition is needed because Minnesota's changing demographics demand that we adapt and reflect that diversity in our classroom, and we need teachers who are trained and supported to help our students learn about the cultural diversity of our state, country, and world, and I ask for members' support.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Do you know the statutory reference to cultural competency?
I don't have it with me right now, Madam Chair.
Well, last year, and I think most members might recall this, but if you didn't, what we modified last year was cultural competency, and that's without the word training, of course, as the ability of families and educators to interact effectively with people of different cultures, native languages, and socioeconomic backgrounds. So my question to you, Representative Lee, is I know this is taken from CALSB's rules. Is it your intention to put all their rules into statute?
Madam Chair, just for this definition, then I think that this is really important for us since our students of color, you know, from my perspective, makes 33% or about a third of our student body. And right now, we only have about 4% of our teachers are teachers of color. And so I think that this is definitely needed so that regardless of the racial background of our teachers, that they're able to work with our students inside of the classroom.
And Representative Lee, wouldn't you want educators then to be trained in how to work with the families in regard to the three that are in statute, Representative Lee?
Madam Chair, I do want our educators to be able to work with our students, families, and communities.
Why, Representative Lee, would you not stop after some socioeconomic groups, since that's what's in statute, Representative Lee?
Madam Chair, I believe that we do need to include our American Indian students, too, so that we can have a better understanding of their cultural background. And also, this past week, we met with the group out from Minnesota, and they were talking about some of their students who are here in the state of Minnesota who may not identify as the gender that they have at birth, and I think that that's crucial for us with what's been going on around in the country, and you know, having our students being engaged with our elected representatives, and I think that it's really important for us to have some of their
concerns and in place.
Well, I certainly think you make a point about, you know, all of our students' needs being addressed, but this, members, is taken from Pelsby's rules, and I'm going to request a no vote on it because if we proceed this way, we have just put one of the rules in statute, and that is not appropriate for us to do at this time. Representative Makewait.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to echo what Representative Lee said and expand a little bit. You know, one of the things that is unique to the LGBTQ community and the disability community is that we're everywhere. We don't live in certain parts of the state. We don't live in just one community. We are just born where we are, and therefore we are everywhere. And so it's important that teachers have this cultural competency in order to teach to the students that they have in their classroom, and that their training reflects the wonderful diversity that they have in their classroom. And so I appreciate Representative Lee bringing this forward and expanding past socioeconomic groups in this definition. I don't think the intent is to put in statute every rule, but this is a great definition for cultural competency training, and I think this is a good amendment.
Representative Kunesh-Bedin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also am in support of this amendment. As a teacher, it's taken me 20 years to kind of figure out how to work best with my students and with my families. And if it's one thing that I've learned is that I can never count on a simple, easy classroom. I have classrooms that are made up of all sorts of students who come from all different cultures, who have experienced that implicit bias and systemic racism. And as a new teacher, you know, there are a lot of things that I did not recognize that I was either doing or experiencing or seeing, and I didn't have that experience of working with families and cultures that I had not been familiar with. But as time went by, I certainly grew to appreciate the diversity, the styles, the uniqueness of each group. And when it comes to our Native American students, they are the ones that are struggling the most. So and as a Native American myself, I'm very pleased to see that they are listed here. But our transgender students, you know, I'm at a middle school where kids are going through some of the most major changes in their lives and finding their own identity. And I think part of my job as a teacher is to build a safe relationship with all of my students where they are safe, where they are comfortable being who they are without the bias or preconceived notions of how they should behave or what they should hide in their personality. And I think it's really important that as teachers of all of Minnesota students that we all have that training, that exposure to it, and I feel that it is very, very important that if we want a healthy society for the future, we are addressing all of these needs. And so I would ask you all to vote yes on this amendment.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I also am in support of this amendment. And I do think that, you know, I hope that this would be written in the rules, but I think having it be specified and spelled out in statute is a stronger way to present it. And I think of my grandkids, and they're young, and they don't know who they are yet. And they'll be going through middle school and high school, and they'll be discovering their identity and in a community of people that share that identity. And I just hope that all of their teachers are able to relate to them in a positive way. And that's, I think, what we would be putting into statute now. And I appreciate the amendment and appreciate I will be supporting it. Thank you.
And members, again, I'll call for a no vote because this is a rule found in the new teacher licensure, and I will have to report this to the administrative law judge. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. No. The motion prevails. Does not prevail, and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Mariani moves the A18.
I so move. Quite simply, as we heard earlier when we were going through amendments, related to some important indicators. We're trying to add to the summative rating tool. The chair and others referenced a few of those in terms of items that are reported in World's Best Workforce, and so the argument is that's a good place to do that. And I concur as well. And so what this would do is require school districts' World's Best Workforce plan to state the numbers of teachers that hold each license level now that we have four tier licenses at each school site, so that the public can know, you know, what the mix of licensing levels are at each of the school sites. It's a good amendment. I don't frankly see a whole lot of controversy in it. In fact, I think it reinforces the tier license approach. It involves the public in being aware of how that's being used on a school-by-school basis.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. This is already required in the licensure educational attainment in performance reporting. Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to speak to this amendment. I wasn't planning to speak to it, but I have a high school student shadowing me for the remainder of session, and I was sitting with her today and asking, what would be important for you to know about your school if this was in a rating? And she listed off about seven things, five of which we heard earlier today in amendments. One is this, and one we'll hear later. And it floored me to know that the things that we're bringing forward that teachers and parents and students would find helpful to know about their school is this stuff. And, you know, you keep mentioning, Chair Erickson, that this is findable at XYZ sites. So is all of the other information about proficiency. So if we're going to assign a summative rating of stars to a school, then that should summate some of the important information about a school, including how teachers have each tier level of license in accordance with the sections. And so I think this is a good amendment. I think it's a smart plan, and I heard from a student earlier today that they really like it.
Thank you, Representative Quay. This already is required. Information in the educational attainment of performance reports. So I recommended no vote. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, so that's all I was going to ask. I know you were sharing information with us, but you were doing so that we would vote against this. I would ask for a roll call vote.
A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Madam Chair?
No.
Daniels? Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen?
No.
Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup?
No.
Kunesh-Podein?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Makeway?
Yes.
Pryor?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being seven ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Jessup moves the A41 amendment. Jessup, please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. First of all, I want to say thank you that I know that there are many issues upon which we will not always receive agreement with one another, but I do appreciate that there are opportunities for us to reach agreement. And last year, we reached agreement to establish a dyslexia specialist at the Department of Education. That was kind of step one. In this session, we heard from Representative Runbeck for 2 hours of training going forward for our teachers to understand dyslexia, understand some of the signs and the symptoms and the opportunity for, I shouldn't say the word treatment, but maybe an alternative education for those students with dyslexia. And then we discussed as well screening of our children at a very early age from perhaps kindergarten up to second grade. This is an opportunity for us to take that one step further, and that is really to give the new Pelsby board the opportunity to establish some teacher preparation programs and this would be for future teachers, to really assess and understand what is dyslexia. And as you can read there, the idea is for the Pelsby Board to work on this program, to engage the dyslexia specialist, the Department of Education, as they do so. And then for the opportunity for the board to come before us, or before this committee, let's say, next year. I would appreciate your support of this amendment.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Bly moves the 829 amendment. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this amendment has to do with the charge of the Special Education Working Group and wanting them to look at reducing the cost subsidy as opposed to the cost contributing to the cost subsidy. I know that there may well be ways that we can reduce special education costs and look at ways to improve meeting the needs of all students, but I was just looking the other day at a Texas school that has increased recess, and this has helped with hyperactive or students who have a difficulty settling down. I think there are lots of ways we can work with behavior issues and perhaps avoid some special education costs, but I also think that from what I hear from my superintendents is that we need to make sure that we are meeting the needs of students and that we are fully, you know, as much as we can fund the special ed needs of the districts. And so I just think that's an important distinction to draw attention to.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Your first point was very well taken because if you delete costs, then we're not going to be able to find out about some of those children who might be identified too early because they've not had the proper screening. So therefore, you know, if we're able to have a discussion during this working group about costs that we could probably avoid or a school district could avoid if a child is placed correctly, I think is really an important reason for keeping the phrase the costs in. Representative Black.
Yeah, just a second. I need to, I didn't have the amendment in front of me, so I just want to make sure I look at it.
It's A29.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Thank you, Mars. Mars is just pointing out that we do want to identify strategies or programs that would be effective in reducing the need for special education services. I think also, though, you know, I have been a special education teacher and worked in a district, and I was a teacher in a level 5 special ed behavioral program. And I convinced my special ed director that it was important for me to be able to educate teachers to what were the needs and things they needed to pay attention to. Sometimes it was a matter of helping them understand norms and understanding behavior, but sometimes it was also making sure that they understood what the problem was and making sure that the best understanding and best assignment of what the remediation might be. I had in my classroom some severely learning disabled students, and if we had only looked at their behavior rather than looking at their needs in reading and writing, we would not have caught those things. And I think that all of those things need to be considered, and not just to look at saving costs, but looking at making sure we're properly identifying and properly understanding what the needs are, and also making sure that we're looking at what we can do in funding these schools so that they aren't caught by surprise by things that come along. Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, if you reference page 56, with the duties of the task force, it is created to review special education delivery and costs. Representative Bly's language simply zeroes in on the special education cross-subsidy. So it's a clean way for us to identify that there's a cross-subsidy that exists. I believe the last time I checked, it was north of $700 million per annum in our state. And so what he's offering us is to have a clean conversation about the special education cross-subsidy. The working group is continued to be charged at looking at costs, but the issue here is to be able to look at that cross-subsidy purely. There may be other ways in which we can reduce that cross-subsidy without doing some potentially damaging cost cuts to vitally important services.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. Representative Christensen, this is your proposal. I would oppose the deletion of costs because I think that when you created this, you specifically were looking at what increases in the cross-subsidy were affecting districts based on some of the costs that were incurring because of, and I'm not saying they're misidentified, but for certain cases, and I think we understood that it was important to have the working group really focus in on that as well as other costs. But these are the costs that contribute to the special education cost subsidy. So would you comment on that, please, Representative Christensen, since this is your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would agree with that assessment, Madam Chair, and I don't think it's any secret that the cross subsidy, you know, is an issue, and I don't think that's hiding from anyone. I don't think the working group will feel constrained not to explore the cross subsidy issue, and I think making special education more efficient and looking at the cost structure and the cost of things is something that's beneficial and something we want the working group to be doing. So I would also oppose the amendment.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, thank you for calling. I represent Christensen, the author of the language, so we can get the intent. So I'm wondering if you would answer the question. Is then the intent, as I read the present language, is to focus on reducing the cost of overall special education funding?
Representative Christensen.
Madam Chair, or Representative Mariani, no.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, you know, it's important that we got that in the record because, quite frankly, as I read the language, that's what it implies to me. And so if that's not your intent, perhaps we should work together to make real clear that that's not what we're what we're expecting to have happen here.
I'm going to renew Representative Bly's motion to pass A-29. My recommendation is that we go with the author, and I would think that would be a no.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative Bly.
I'd like a roll call on that.
A roll call has been requested. The clerk can take the vote.
Manager Erickson?
No.
Daniels?
No.
Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Bly?
Yes.
Christensen?
No.
Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup?
No.
Kunesh-Podein?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Makewade?
Yes.
Pryor?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Warwick?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Kunesh-Podein offers the 837. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment prohibits schools from limiting a student's participation in school activities graduation ceremonies, athletics, or other extracurricular activities, as well as from limiting access to materials or technology due to unpaid meal balances or unpaid fees. It also prohibits school from disciplining students due to an unpaid meal balance. I think we all can agree that we want our students to be as successful as possible and remove barriers to their learning. We also know that many of our students come to school hungry for no fault of their own. And when students are penalized by the school and not allowed to participate in certain events because of an unpaid meal balance, the kids get caught in the middle. And the emotional and psychological fallout from that is certainly a deterrent in the ability to focus on what they need to do in a school day, to complete their schoolwork as well. And so I would ask for support in this amendment. We can look for solutions as time goes by. I know Representative Thiessen has a bill out there that would make free lunch for all, which would be really great in a perfect world, but at least we can start here and remove some of those barriers to our students by not punishing them for no fault of their own because of unpaid lunch balances.
Thank you, Representative Kudish-Vadim. Ms. Perra, would you check 123B.38, because I think what, and members, I support this amendment, but I think we're modifying a section that deals with there wouldn't have to be a hearing. I think that's what I read earlier today when I was going through that statute. Ms. Perra.
Madam Chair, the section reads, before the initiation of any fee not authorized or prohibited by sections 120B, 36, and 37, the local board must hold a public hearing within the district upon 3 weeks published notice in the district's official newspaper, or such notice is otherwise required for a regular board meeting given 3 weeks before the hearing on the proposed adoption of the policy.
So, Ms. Perra, this means there wouldn't have to be a hearing, correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Members, we're ready to vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Lee offers the A5 amendment. Representative Lee, please explain the A5.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A5 amendment is regarding the early childhood family educators and adult basic educators. And Madam Chair, I did talk with you about this, and you expressed some concerns that they have with the community educators, and that's why you were not willing to, you want them to get together to work this out a little bit more too. And so I appreciate you sharing that with me. And I just want to bring this up so that we could start having the conversation about how we could address the inequities that our early childhood family education and adult basic education teachers face. These educators are required to be fully licensed, but they do not have access to the same protections as traditional K-12 teachers. And this amendment fixes the inequity and changes the law so that these invaluable ECFE and AB educators are covered under the Continuing Contract Law and Teacher Tenure Act. And these employees will be able to, one, fully participate in the teacher development and evaluation system, two, receive protection during a layoff without notice, and three, due process in the event of proposed termination of teacher's contract. And I do want to note that this will not change their current negotiated benefits, scheduling practices, or their individual entitlement to full or part-time position.
Thank you, Representative Lee. My problem with this is that there are groups that are still opposed to this, so I would like to see this continue to be worked on. Kudish-Vadim, Representative Kudish-Vadim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to speak in support of this bill. I know many early childhood family educators who put in so much time and so much energy. They have completed full degrees, full licensure, just as a classroom teacher has. Many of them have gone past that into master's programs or specialty areas, as well as adult basic educators. We are We're a community of educators in our districts, and when there are inequities that, through no fault of our own, again, it's important that we remove those barriers once again so that we have the teachers that are able to do their full job and be appreciated and compensated for doing the same work as any other teacher in their district, but for reasons of how we're classifying them, find themselves either at a lower pay grade or don't have quite the same options as a regular classroom teacher. And so I would ask you to support this amendment.
So, Representative Kudish-Kadeen, is your intention then that community ed and ABE teachers then not be paid through the community education fund but go into the general fund of a school district? Because now they are paid through community education.
I'm just asking that they have the same opportunities as a regular school, regular ed teacher. How that funding is worked out within between the community ed and the general fund, I'm not sure exactly how that would work, but I think it's important that we start the conversation and make sure that they are in the teacher pool along with the rest of them.
And Representative Kudish-Kadeen, I do understand what you're saying. There's not agreement among the parties, and for that reason, I think we have to continue to have the conversation, and I would recommend a no vote on this, members.
Could we have a roll call, please?
We can have a roll call. It's been requested.
Madam, we don't need a roll call.
Representative Bly, you wanted to respond.
Just one brief comment. The last time I talked to a community ed director in my district, he was asking for ways to make it more attractive for these kinds of workers to come into the workplace. And certainly these kinds of protections might be something to be considered and should be part of the conversation.
And Representative White, perhaps community ed will happen, but ABE is still a big issue. So with that, all those in favor of the A5 amendment moved by Representative Lee, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Is the A28 amendment being offered? I do not have an author for that. So, withdraw A28. Representative Rarick offers the A7 amendment. Representative Rarick, explain your bill. Amendment.
It
is a bill, too.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually Representative Howell's bill. He asked me to offer this as an amendment to the bill. We did make one small change. His language would have required this. We have changed it to just encourage. So this will be something that the schools will have the flexibility, but we wanted to raise the awareness, allowing these patriotic groups access to be able to talk to kids. Involvement with groups is very good, and not all our kids are involved in sports or band and music. And so these are groups like Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, the Boys and Girls Club, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. These are programs that could be very beneficial that not everyone is aware of, and so we would like to encourage our schools to allow them in to talk to our young kids, especially about being able to get involved.
Is there further discussion? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Clarification, my quick reading of this is that this is to be done during the school day.
Representative Rare.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I believe that is it, and part of what they're trying to recommend is there are certain days that they do special
programs
around that, and that they would try to encourage them to actually do it that same day, not during that part, but during that same day. Yeah, there are a number of them, and that's part of it. They would have to write in and request ahead of time, and then the school would be able to give them advance notice of when those days are so that they could do it on that specific day.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Schools that I'm familiar with have had lyceums or special programs maybe once a month. But then these kinds of things, the opportunity to explore scouts and things like that, were after school. And I'm concerned, as we have talked endlessly about adding on to the school day, that we're putting a hole in our instructional time. I mean, these are all important things, but I'm concerned about that instructional time.
Representative Rarick.
Madam Chair, thank you. I believe Representative Howell's intent was that when you do it after school, a number of kids that are riding the bus or some other things miss out. So that's, I think, was why he was bringing this forward.
Yeah,
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, this is the first that we've seen.
Yes, it is.
Of this. Mm-hmm. We know that there's some other bills that have been introduced that, we didn't have a hearing for any, sort of reason. It seems to me that we should be pretty consistent about how we proceed here. It feels okay to me, but, I'm elected to do more than just feel my way through legislation. I really wish we would have more time to deliberate this more carefully, and then obviously to hear from our schools and people who teach in them, who administer, run them, about what impact, negative or positive, that this could have in terms of their ability to administer their schools. The organizations that Representative Rarick mentions have been around for a long time, and it seems to me that perhaps there are reasons why schools currently do whatever practices they do. I don't know even to what degree some provide access or not. Just a lot of questions, I think, that we could benefit from having an ability to hear this. And I don't know that there's a particular rush for us to do this. I would say let's hold off on this and let's look at it at the next session and have a much more careful discussion about its impact on our schools, if any.
And I understand, Representative Mariani, this came very late, and I did call in some of the educational folks who attend these hearings and ask them to advise me as to language, and that is why the school board is encouraged, and why there are some other changes in here that were not in the bill. But I got a little pressure to provide this in this omnibus bill. So kind of reluctantly, I'm going to ask you to support it, and then we'll work on it. So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay.
No.
I think the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. But Representative Mariani, I agree with you. If I hadn't been bawled out, I wouldn't have offered it. Sorry. Sorry, Representative Berg. He is just the gopher, so please don't. Don't shoot him, please. No. Representative Mariani, are you offering the A21 amendment? This is the dashboard. Well, not maybe the dashboard, but I think.
Madam Chair, I thought your amendment got at a good chunk of my concern, which is a single measure here. I'll look at it some more carefully and perhaps we can talk a little bit later, but at this point,
thank you.
I'll withdraw the
amendment. Representative Mariani withdraws the A21 amendment. Representative Ward, we're getting close to the end now. Representative Ward offers the A25 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment came about from the conversations that we had, the testimony that we had when we were talking about charter schools. And this was one of the little surprises when we realized that some charter schools have contracts with organizations that are profit-making. And it felt really uncomfortable and didn't seem appropriate that we would be having schools that are public schools receiving public money to be contracting with organizations that are making a profit on that. And so we're specifically targeting the charter schools, those agencies that substantially or all in the, are responsible for the charter school's educational design and implementation. Be happy to answer questions. It's really a matter of principle, and the amendment allows time, a couple of years, for the schools and the agencies to work out their finances so that they wouldn't be profiting from public money.
Thank you, Representative Ward. I think the issue here is that we don't have in charter school section of law a definition of charter management organizations, which are CMOs for short, mm-hmm. or educational management organizations, which are EMOs. And for that reason, I would like us to hold off on this amendment. If we're going to vote on it, I would have to recommend a no, because we do need to have this definition. And I know there's also a lot of discussion out in the field about the use of CMOs and EMOs, and I think that has to be worked out, because I did not include any of that in the charter school section of the omnibus bill, because it is still up for debate. So if you want to proceed, I'm afraid, you know, I'll have to recommend a no vote, but it needs to be worked on. I agree. Maquaid, Representative Maquaid.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to echo what Representative Ward said. I was floored. I had no idea that some charter school management organizations were taking public dollars as part of their profit. I mean, I honestly didn't. I don't even know how that was put into law in the first place. And I understand that CMOs and EMOs are not currently defined, but I think the way that we have defined it here gets to exactly what CMOs and EMOs are doing, which is providing all or substantially all the charter school's educational design or implementation. I highly doubt that while they work out the other technical changes that they had brought here that they didn't seem to agree on, that people who are making a profit from public dollars are going to be inclined to support not making that profit anymore. I think it is going to be on us as public officials to manage those public dollars. And so I would encourage us to vote for this amendment. I would request a roll call vote. I believe the people of Minnesota deserve to know that their dollars are being spent in education for simply the education of students and not for profit for companies.
Representative Ward, did you want to respond?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Maquaid. I appreciate the clarification on that, and it seems to me that it's also incumbent upon us to get these definitions taken care of so that it can be managed properly. But I don't think that we need the definitions in order to put this boundary on the charter schools, so that we do not have public dollars going for a profit-making organization.
Well, just members, to remember that regular school districts also have contracts with for-profit companies, so our public dollars also go to for-profits. When we did strategic plans in my school district, that was a private company that allowed for the management of the strategic plan with those of us who were appointed to serve on the committee, and that was with a private company, and they made a profit. In fact, it was always disappointing to me because $10,000 usually went on the shelf. So I think really what we need to do is get a definition into the charter school law. So I'm going to recommend a no vote. Oh, roll call is requested. I'm sorry. We'll have the roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Madam Chair Erickson?
No.
Daniel? Mariani?
Yes.
Barr?
No.
Bennett?
No.
Lai?
Yes.
Christensen?
No.
Russell?
No.
Haley?
No.
Jessup?
No.
Punish-Pudding?
Yes.
Lee?
Yes.
Maquaid?
Yes.
Fire?
Yes.
Rarick?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Representative Pryor offers the A30.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To begin, though, I'm going to withdraw this amendment. And what it's in regards to is we heard from Representative Daniels 2 different bills about charter school being able to give preference to students in a geographic area, And one of the schools, we had testifiers, and we heard what the story was, and we understood why this was, you know, something that would be beneficial. And the other school, we did not hear any testimony about. But since that time, we actually took it upon ourselves to try to investigate a little bit and find out about that school, too, and found out it was a very similar situation. And so, you know, if we picked, we are, but, and then I bring up this point, we are on this path where, you know, it's just one after another. There's these exceptions that are coming forward, and our understanding from the testifier that was there that day was that charter schools are set up not to be geographically defined. And so I'm withdrawing the amendment, but I do think that that probably is a policy that needs to be examined in the near future about what the definition of a charter school is so that we don't keep having these one-of exceptions being brought forward.
Is there any further discussion? Thank you, Representative Pryor, for withdrawing that. Yes, we've had a discussion in my GOP committee about whether or not we need a policy, or we can't really undo Representative Murphy's because we okayed that several years ago. And for that reason, I allowed it to be placed in my omnibus bill, both Representative Daniels and Representative Garofalo's provisions, because I just felt that I needed to do that to honor them in the same way that we honored Representative Murphy. But we do need to have a discussion about this. Representative Erdahl offers the E11 amendment. Please explain your amendment, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, for the moment you've all been waiting for. In our Minnesota statutes, we have, in social studies, 3.5 credits. History, geography, economics, world history, and then the category government and civics. And civics education in Minnesota is, in my opinion, reaching a crisis point. When I went over this bill last week, I think it was last week, it was reported that NAEP, the National Assessment for Progress in Education, has surveyed Minnesota, and they found that our graduates are 23% proficient in civics knowledge. So 3 out of 4 who graduate are not proficient. Don't understand how our government works. Now, through our standards, we have really good standards. You know, starting in kindergarten.
Yes.
Going on through. But there's a great disparity in how and when civics is taught. It could be 7th through 12th grade, no particular civics class in the school. You just teach to the standards in a history class, and you know, maybe the standards get taught and maybe they don't, and you really don't have any way to know. In some schools, it's taught in ninth grade as a ninth grade civics. Some teach it to juniors and seniors, which is what I'm recommending. And I can remember many years ago when civics was a class 4 credit, a specific amount of credits. Whatever we're doing today just isn't working the way it should work. And I have just today arrived in my mail. Actually, did just today.
Yeah, I did.
A letter from the Chief Judge of the 8th Judicial District. And he says, it's Judge Michael J. Thompson. In my role as a district judge, I see on a daily basis people who basically have no understanding how our system of government is set up. There's a lack of awareness that we have a representative form of government. There's a lack of awareness that the legislature enacts laws, not the governor or the courts. There is essentially no awareness of what separation of powers means. I'm only reading a couple of his paragraphs. He says, I know that since the 1970s, civics classes have become electives and in many cases basically non-existent. Priority has been put on the 3 R's and now the sciences. These are important, but for our society to survive, it is also important that our citizens understand the basic concepts of our Constitution and governmental structure. I often say that bad facts make bad law. The bad fact in this case is that most people do not understand our system of government. And he says, you are free to use this as an endorsement of your bill to educate young people of the state about our government and Constitution. And so what am I asking for? I believe that we need to have a class in devoted to civics offered for credit in the state of Minnesota. And I don't specify how long that course has to be. I don't specify how many credits it has to be. These are things that our local school boards can decide for themselves. But it's important to raise the relevance of civics education by doing this, and it's important to teach it, I believe, to juniors and seniors. Ninth graders, in my opinion, are not ready. Juniors and seniors are on the verge of taking the next step where they become active participants in our democracy by voting. And I think that's an important thing that we need to do. Now, for some schools, this is no change at all. They're already doing it that way. For others, yes, there might be some changes that they have to make. Maybe there will be an elective that they have to reconfigure. But I believe they can do it. I'm confident in the ability of our school boards to manage to teach civics in a way that it needs to be taught, but also to do other things. When I was teaching for 20 years, I taught a class that started at 7:50 in the morning, outside of the regular school day, on the Civil War. It was amazing that a school district in rural Minnesota could devote credit and time to a class on the Civil War outside of the regular school day. So it's possible to do these types of things. And so it comes back down to, what are the priorities? What do we need to do? What do our students need to learn? And that's what this is about. The second part of this goes back to the bill that I did present to this committee regarding the required test that in 2016 we did pass, the 50-point test based upon the naturalization test. And the point I'm making here is that we need to have an aggregate score. If we give a test, I'm not asking this to be placed on the same level as the scores and then the record keeping with the MCAs, but I'm saying that at the very least, since we are requiring that students take a test, let's have the aggregate score reported to the Department of Education so that they know, we know, that the test is being taken and what percent are passing the test. And so, in a nutshell, if you guys want me to go longer, I could go another... I could go easily half... Mr. Unia is shaking his head.
I think I'll wrap that.
That concludes my comments, but I appreciate the interest and the support, and I found great support on this committee, and I hope it goes for another minute or so. But this is really an important piece of legislation, in my opinion, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl, you probably should be our ambassador for civics and go around the state and talk about what you
just
talked
about. You
better get rid of me, aren't you? Well, I must admit I don't like where you put some of this, but, we'll live with that and we'll deal with it when it gets to the next step. Representative Mariani.
Chair, Representative Erdahl, you should speak more passionately about this.
I dial back.
Did you see all his co-authors, Representative Mariani?
It's quite an impressive list, yeah. I must say.
It was.
I just have a few questions.
Yes, please.
One is that so this isn't speaking to the merit of the issue, but one of the things that the language does, arguably, by focusing on 11th through 12th grade, I think secondary schools could say, you've now limited my ability to be able to spread this out across, the 4 years or 6 years if there's a junior high connected. You and I spoke a little bit about this, and I know that part of that is that you wanted to make sure that there was sort of a mature, you know, understanding of the knowledge, and I think that's correct. But I do think that this poses some potentially difficult management issues, administrative issues for secondary schools, and if asked to do this or required, whether must or whatever, I think maybe the comeback might be, yeah, but give us some flexibility on how to spread that out. So just something to think about, you know, depending on what happens here, right? I think the other thing is,
Could I address that first before you go on to the
point? Chair, yes, please.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, first of all, there is flexibility. I mean, this doesn't have to be the only place it's taught. And I do not say that. I don't intend that. You could, in my school, when I was teaching seventh grade, I did teach the Constitution. I did teach the standards to my seventh graders as part of my history course. But it was also taught again to ninth graders in civics in London Spicer. And so, I mean, children, students learn through repetition. So, in some ways, when they're juniors and seniors, when they're on the verge of, again, becoming participants in our democracy as voters, it's just the culmination of what should have been following them through their educational career. So, and going back to the flexibility within this, the way it's structured now, again, it says a course for credit. It doesn't say how long the course has to be and doesn't say what the credits are. Could be an eighth of a credit, quarter credit, half a credit, a full credit, but that's up to the school board.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, and Representative Erdahl, again, depending on what happens here, you may want to be very specific about that, because I read a credit as one credit, but it sounds like that's not your intent. So perhaps you might kind of want to play
it
with
just
that.
Says for credit.
It says
A credit. All right, we'll work on that one.
The other thing that I talked about is, you know, there are a lot of students that are actively engaged, you know, beyond just the classroom, but are actively engaged in civic engagement, civic activities. You know, volunteering locally. My own son was now in college, spent 4 years with a group called Youth Thrive, which was a combination of community service and a study of policy, a study of, you know, democratic decision-making. There are probably endless opportunities out there. You know, the high school PAGE program that we offer here, and obviously not everyone gets in on that. I get it, but the point is that there are some experiential things out there, and so I don't think that takes away from what you're doing, but I think it's something that should be on the table if we're going to be promoting and advancing, you know, this concept. And then
No.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. You see, if you ask me too many questions at one time, we get all mixed up over here. So on that one, Representative Mariani, as I may have indicated to you, I think I did, I do have plans for what you just said, but I have been told that now is not the time. But what you're saying, I see a value in, and, you know, a future time, I think we can work on that, but not today and not in this particular piece of legislation. But I know what you're saying. I think it's a good idea.
Representative
Mariani. Representative Erdahl and I are agreeing so much it's scary.
We've
got to
stop this.
Yeah, we've got to stop this, right? Then the other thing I want to raise is, you know, on the on lines 2.2 through 2.4, we've got the department then doing a report out, you know, of those 30 or 50. I suspect, again, depending if this goes on, this may become a question in Finance Committee in terms of what, you know, if there's a cost there, so we might want to be looking at a fiscal note related to that. But I just want to point that out because we haven't talked about that particular piece as you presented the amendment.
Thank you.
Representative Ward. Thank you, Madam Chair. My mother-in-law was a junior high social studies teacher, and she was her passion for getting junior high kids, 7th, 8th, and 9th graders, just really engaged in particularly civics and government, would put this guy under the table. I mean, she was on fire about this stuff. You would be mild compared to her. Yes, right. I think that's perhaps part of, besides the fact that I had some really good government teachers, part of my reason in supporting the work that needs to be done to be sure that our students have a good sense, a sensibility about the place in this world that we're trying to make better. And I think that there are problems. It's complicated, but that we need to figure it out. We need to move forward, make some commitments, but figure out how to make it work. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, for bringing this forward. I just want to echo your words of how important civics is. And, you know, right in the Declaration of Independence, it says that our government derives its just powers from the consent of the governed. And if the governed don't know that they're in the helm or whatever, and if they don't know how our government works really as a country, we're kind of doomed. And so it's very, very important that our young people understand our government, because they're the ones who are going to be leading us and driving our government. So thank you for bringing this.
Any further discussion? Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl. I think this is a really important bill. I agree with you. I think we're facing a crisis in civics education in our state and in our country. When I was in civics class in ninth grade, a very long time ago, not as long ago as you, Representative Erdahl, but when I was in civics class in ninth grade, and we were being taught about the political parties, and we were taught about, you know, general things, you know, the names of the two major political parties in the United States, and minor parties, and abbreviations, and those sorts of things. So we learned, you know, that the abbreviations in Minnesota for the two major parties are DFL and GOP, and someone in class, you know, very eager student, that wasn't me, to clarify, raised their hand and asked what the two abbreviations, what they stood for. And the teacher in our class couldn't answer the question, what DFL and GOP stand for. So my point here is I think we need to, in future sessions, be looking at how we're training our teachers in civics education, because that was, ninth grade, Drew Christensen was very disconcerting, and is still disconcerting, and frankly, I think we are facing a crisis for civics education. This is a great amendment, and I'm supporting it.
Is there any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. But Representative Erdahl, when we get to finance, Representative Mariani and I are going to be digging into this.
Well, I hope there is some money, because otherwise I can't go to finance.
Well, this whole bill goes to finance.
I know.
Our last amendment, Representative May Quaid, moves the 836 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this amendment, though it may look, I don't know, scary, it's primarily an issue of alignment. This language aligns with our middle, align our middle school and high school expectations with our public higher education institutions, MNSCU. And since about half of our high school students matriculate to our higher education institutions, it's important that we're teaching them consent. I've modeled this bill after one that many of you may be familiar with. Senator Jim Abler passed a bill that added to our health standards for STDs, STIs, and this is within that model. We really used it to base it off of. I'd also liken this to teaching students about plagiarism. We teach high school students about plagiarism and fabrication in the high school so that when they go to college, they avoid doing that there. Ultimately, that's what this is about as well. This is about consent so that when they go to college, they have been taught the expectations that they'll be expected to live by. This also will help with the completion and four-year graduation rates. It will help cut down on the suspensions and expulsions we've seen in higher education and hopefully get more folks out of college and into our workforce. So last I'll say, and this goes kind of maybe outside of education but into my jobs committee role, this will help reduce the rates of sexual harassment that happen in workplaces. We have young folks who aren't being taught appropriate ways to engage with one another, and this will ultimately lead to better workers, better students, better completion rates, and hopefully a better society. So I would ask for your support on this amendment. It's about consent. Yes means yes. There's a wonderful British cartoon about tea. It says if you can understand why you wouldn't pour tea down a unconscious person's throat, or if they ask for tea and you give them tea and then they don't want the tea, they shouldn't have to drink the tea. So that's basically what consent is. It's a wonderfully British video. So I ask for your support on this amendment for consent.
Is there discussion? Well, thank you, Representative McQuaid. This is really a very important issue. What I wish that you would do is continue to work on this so that you could fit it into Aaron's Law and our sexual trafficking section that we have just worked on and placed in this amendment. My other statement would be that character education probably needs to precede students learning what consent is. So I like the topic. I know it's important, but I'm having problems with the way you've constructed the amendment, and wish that you would continue to work on it and perhaps make it fit into Aaron's Law and sex trafficking so we have this continuity as we've already worked on in this committee. Well, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I understand your advice here. My concern is that in many other areas we are moving pretty quickly, and I think appropriately so. I don't think that the issue that Representative McQuaid has before us is something that is or should be constrained within our sex trafficking, anti-sex trafficking efforts. We're talking about behavior that cuts across all sorts of relationships and dynamics, and not just where there's a sex trafficking, predatory behavior that's happening here. And frankly, the sooner that we can get to normalizing for our young people what appropriate, respectful, dignified behavior is, I think the sooner we're going to be able to cut into a good chunk of that predatory behavior. I've raised two boys and a daughter. We had these conversations early on. I've got grandkids now having the same kind of conversations. I don't want us to keep kicking this can down the road as we're trying to put it into our emerging infrastructure of bills that answers the predatory behavior, which is appropriate. We should be doing that. This is really something that's bigger and transcends. And I see no reason why we could move ahead now and then continue to build our interventions around this basic core expectation of what dignified, normalized dignified behavior should be in our state. So I really think we ought to do this right now, and I just don't see the need for us to put this off any further.
Is there further discussion? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very quickly, I've been working on, I mentioned the other night, the
trafficking bills. And reading through this, it really belongs in the schools and not with the trafficking situation. I totally agree with what Representative McQuaid said in presenting it, and would second what Representative Mariani has explained. We need to come at it from a multitude of directions, and I appreciate support for this.
Madam Chair.
Representative McQuaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Pryor, I just saw your hand go up. I'll let you go first. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm in support of this and doing something now. And I think what we all realize is this is the issue of our time, and that sometimes, you know, there is that tide. And you have to rise and be there when an issue comes forward. And it's right now it's out there in the schools, and parents are looking, I think, for leadership. And so this is our opportunity to lead. And I can't think of a better place to lead than a K-12 policy, which says our policy is that this is consent is something that is part of our culture, part of Minnesota, and it's part of our public school system. So I think this is maybe one of those opportunities that we ought not to miss, even if it's not the perfect section and statute to put it, but it would show leadership, and it would be at a time when people are looking for leadership.
Representative McQuaid. Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to request a roll call on this. I think this is very important, and I want to tell you why I didn't try to fit it in with Aaron's law, because this isn't about sexual trafficking or sex trafficking. It's about house standards. This is how we conduct ourselves as people in interpersonal relationships. Consent is the cornerstone with which relationships, sexual or non-sexual, are built on. And so it's important that we teach our young students this. They will never know what we don't teach them. We're not preparing them for the real world if we don't teach them that this is what consent means, and this is how we engage in activity, in particular when it's physical activity. So that is why it's in house standards and not in sex trafficking, which is very different. We want to teach students healthy ways to interact with each other. We want to teach them how healthy relationships are formed. And every year that goes by that we don't, we raise another generation of students who are met with consequences in higher institution education or education institutions that they didn't know those were expectations. If we don't teach them, they'll never know. And so this is very important, and I hope I can get support from folks on the committee for this amendment. Thank you.
Well, Representative McQuaid, I'm going to support this, but warn you that there may be some reconfiguration if this survives in finance, and if there's a companion that comes from the Senate. So
Representative Mariani's in finance with me, and we'll see how we could maybe configure it. And I wouldn't want it to be re-referred to the Committee on Health Reform. That could happen, so
Madam Chair,
tread carefully. Representative McQuaid.
I think there might be an amendment from the department that I could offer as an oral amendment, but we can also work on that as well. Thank you for your support.
Roll call is going to be requested. Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, given the Chair's support for the amendment, perhaps we can dispense with a roll call.
Yes. Roll call has been withdrawn. Cherry News, Representative McQuaid's. Excuse me. Representative Haley. Sorry.
Do we still do a roll call?
No, we're not going to do a roll call. Representative Haley. It was withdrawn. So I renew Representative McQuaid's motion to move the 836 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Okay, members. We are finished. Representative Rudolph, you'll be able to be on TV in time. So, members, with that, the chair moves the H3315DE1 amendment as amended to House File 3315. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very brief because I want to get to dinner as well. I think this omnibus bill has a lot of good provisions in it that I feel comfortable supporting. However, it's got a couple that I'm not comfortable at all with. And no surprise, you know, the summative rating is particularly problematic for me, for quite a few members of the committee, and quite frankly, for a good chunk of our public education delivery system. I think there's a better way to do this, and I'm hoping as this bill moves forward that we can get to that better way. I also have kind of on a smaller scale, and I certainly will work with you and others, concerns around some of the language around school dismissal, particularly that where we're divorcing the alternative practices as a prerequisite prior to a dismissal. I think there are certainly circumstances where a school needs to move quickly. I would prefer language that would more kind of limit and prescribe that as opposed to this language that I think, you know, walks too far back from our expectation that school dismissal should be, if done, should be connected with existing alternative practices. I think there's an easy way to do that, but at this point I'm comfortable with it. Having said that, you have some very good provisions here, I think, around discipline practices that I'm really encouraged, you know, in terms of going forward. It's my intention to work with you to make sure we've got a good bipartisan bill that the governor signs. I want to do the same with Representative Loon. At this point, I just can't support the bill, primarily because of the big summative rating provision in it. But, you know, the spirit in which I'm approaching this is to be able to get to a place where I'm fully supporting the efforts to get a good out of this bill in front of the governor before too long.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. We are going to take a vote on getting the amendment onto 3315.
Oh, I apologize. So, I should know.
The chair renews a motion that the DE1 amendment, as amended, be amended to or attached to House File 3315. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So now we have before us House File 3315 as amended. And members, there are many good things in this proposal that we're sending to finance. We're protecting students. We have the Fair Pupil Dismissal Act. Yes, we might have some further discussion. I know we will in finance. We have the addition to Aaron's Law. We have added sex trafficking to that. And we also have Representative Kunesh-Badin's provision on Jake's Law, and now we've added a consent from Representative Kunesh-Badin, from Representative McQuaid. I think we honor parents in this. I know there's consternation about the star rating system, but from parents who testified in our committee, I believe we heard from them that they want information about their children in their schools and which schools to choose. So the rating is something that, you know, we're going to work on in finance, and hopefully we can come to an agreement that some kind of rating system will be good for us. And finally, I think we're keeping teachers involved in discipline and discussion, and that we will continue to do that. And we're clarifying accountability and ensuring that we are providing information in a useful and friendly way to our parents and to our community. So members, with that, the chair moves House File 3315 as amended to be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails and the bill is on its way to finance. Thank you very much, members. We will not meet next week, but we may, at the call of the chair, be hearing some other interesting bills, so stay tuned. Thank you very much again for your attentiveness.